Well, hey everyone, welcome to Double Episode Week here on the Vinyl Guide Podcast. This week we're having a two-parter conversation, talking with serial vinyl entrepreneur Chad Kasem. Now, Chad is the owner and general manager of AcousticSounds.com, Analog Productions, you know, the audiophile vinyl record label. He also leads Quality Record Pressing, the vinyl pressing plant that has an amazing reputation for audiophile pressings, plus heaps of other ventures that Chad is part of. Chances are, if you enjoy vinyl records, you probably already own something that Chad's companies have had a hand in making. So to start your journey, head over to AcousticSounds.com and you'll essentially see an internet portal for vinyl record enthusiasts. It's like the Amazon.com for audiophiles. That's AcousticSounds.com. And today is part one of our two-part conversation with Chad into his history, his companies, and details about the audiophile pressings that we all enjoy. And hey, let me ask you, do you like the Vinyl Guide Podcast? Oh, you do? Well, that's great. Three things we need you to know. Number one, we have like 160 plus other episodes available at thevinylguide.com. We give away our podcast each week. We don't charge a nickel. We do it because we're passionate about music and vinyl records. So check out our hundreds of interviews anytime via our Apple or Android mobile apps, or at thevinylguide.com. And number two, if you like our show and you wish to contribute to our ability to keep going, please consider becoming a show patron at patreon.com/vinylguide. Whether it's $2, $5, $10, $20, or more per month, it really goes a long way to help keep these episodes coming. That's patreon.com/vinylguide, and thank you in advance for your consideration. And of course, number three, we have a show sponsor, GrooveWasher.com, the best manual record cleaner I know of, and believe me, I've pretty much used them all. Record cleaning kits start at $15, and deluxe packages go for around $60. But guess what? Here's an extra 10% off all the good stuff at GrooveWasher.com when you use checkout code VinylGuide10. So stock up on your vinyl record cleaning supplies and vinyl accessories at GrooveWasher.com and an extra 10% off with discount code VinylGuide10. Enjoy! All right, here we go. So part one of two, strap in, get yourself a fresh coffee, tea, or caffeine-free diet cherry Dr. Pepper, and let's talk to Chad Kasem of AcousticSounds.com. All right. This week on The Vinyl Guide, we have on the show serial vinyl entrepreneur Chad Kasem. Now, Chad, you are so involved in so many different businesses around the world of vinyl. Let me see if I got them all correct, okay?
All right.
So there's Acoustic Sounds. That's an online store for audiophiles, acousticsounds.com. There's Analog Productions, which is an audiophile record label that you have to do reissues and even issue some of your own productions as well. But that's a high-quality vinyl produced by Analog Productions. There's Quality Record Pressing, which is a record pressing plant in Salina, Kansas. There's Blue Heaven Studios, which is a recording studio out of a converted church that you bought, again, in Salina, Kansas. There's a blues festival that you have, Blues Masters at the Crossroads, again, in Salina, Kansas. I believe that's an annual event. What else am I missing?
Well, the in Blue Heaven Studios, we bought Doug Sachs Mastering Facilities, and so now we have one of the most unique sounding. You know, he did all the Pink Floyd and so many of the great records. So we got Doug Sachs Mastering Facility, which is all tubes inside the recording studio. We also have superhighres.com, which is you can download high-resolution files, you know, whether it's DSD or 192 or 2496 files. So, you know, it's like iTunes for audio files, you know. Now, we also have APO Records, which is our original recordings where we record blues and music we like. And so the Analog Productions is mostly reissues, and APO stands for Analog Productions Originals. So that's a little bit different than the Analog Productions, but it's all good music and all sounds good. And then the Blues Masters Concerts, we've done that for 21 years straight, once a year. But, you know, I think we're going to hang it up at least for next year. I need to miss it for a while because it's been great. It's fun. We get musicians from, you know, blues musicians from all over, the greatest ones we can find. And we get chefs come from Louisiana, cook Cajun food. But it's just, you know, I lose a lot of money on it, and it takes a lot of our time. Mostly it's the time it takes. Mm-hmm. And it's like a big party. But I think after this last one is 21 years in a row, I think I'm going to, like,
hit the
put it down
button.
For a while.
Yeah.
It may be done, or it may be just done for now. But, you know, we've documented 21 years of the greatest masters, from Gate Mouth Brown to Bobby Blue Bland, to, you know, Honey Boy Edwards, to Robert Jr. Lockwood. I mean, we've got it all taped and recorded to analog and DSD. So at some point when I get a chance, we're going to go through all that. But, you know, a lot of them have passed on since. You know, a lot of the real true older masters have passed on in that time. So not that we're having trouble finding great blues people still. It's just I think we...
Well, sounds like you got a lot of stuff you're juggling right now, and
oh my God,
you're like the Elon Musk of audiophiles. Everywhere you see a gap, you see opportunity.
Well, you know what I do is, you know, I moved to Kansas in 1984, and I started collecting records as a hobby. Well, I was just trying to build a collection, you know. And so when you find, you know, rare records, even if you have one, you know it's very rare. I mean, you just don't leave it at the store because your friend might want one, you know. So, you know, I just started buying, selling, and trading as a hobby. And then by 1986, you know, my whole apartment was full of albums, you know, and had to move out. Then I bought a house, you know. So, I mean, by 1986, it was a full-on business. But 1988, I bought a house. We were doing $100,000 a month out of a bedroom in a house, you know. And this is all when CDs just came out in 84. So I've been going against the grain since the day CD came out is the day I really started. And I've been doing vinyl from, again, basically the time CDs came out. Well, everything's just been the next natural step, you know. Well, you know, you sell pre-owned albums, you sell new albums, then you go, wow, I should reissue some of my favorite albums. And you start reissuing your favorite albums. Then you're like, well, you know, I ought to get my own mastering facility and do my own remasterings, you know, masterings. And then you go, wow, I need to hire a graphic designer. So now we're up to doing everything from the microphone to the recording to the mastering to the plating to the pressing, to the graphic design, to the insert printing and inserts. We do everything from the mic. We can do everything from the microphone to the selling and distributing the record. The only thing I can't do is sing, and you know, and the only thing I can't do is also, we don't make the album jackets. We have a four-color press that can make inserts and labels and everything, but I just had to call it. You know, the place we have make our jackets are so good. You know, like, I just decided, all right, we do everything but the jackets. And everybody's like, well, why don't you do jackets? And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, I just can't take any more. But so basically, just to kind of answer, I think, was a question, like, what do we do? Or like you're saying about Mr. Musk, is we decide to control the timing and the quality by doing it ourselves and doing it all in-house. and that's might be what he does. You know, if he needs tires and he buys a lot of tires, then, you know, maybe he thinks he can build them better. You know, he'll build some tires, you know, a tire company, you know, and so that's kind of what we've done. And now we've got it to a point where there's 100 employees. And also on our website, Acoustic Sounds, which you described as first, is basically the main business. And Acoustic Sounds sells everybody's records. It sells, you know, all the major labels. And then sometimes, like the Beatles and the Hendrix albums, we press for the major labels, but then we'll buy them and sell them on our website. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the one other business that we didn't mention that's kind of a business within a business is the Vinyl Vault. And the Vinyl Vault, what the Vinyl Vault is all our pre-owned collectible albums, you know, where we get these big collections and then we clean them and play them and grade them and put them on the Vinyl Vault. So another thing about Acoustic Sounds is when, let's just say you come to Acoustic Sounds, you can buy Cat Stevens' Teeth of the Tillamon album we reissued on 33 or 45. You can buy the download from our Hi-Res site. You can buy the Sony player that you can play you can store your downloads on, and a turntable. And so you can buy the recording and the equipment you need to play the recording, whether it's download mm-hmm. or turntable, and do all that, buy it now. You know, push one button and the turntable's getting shipped out the door, the download's being downloaded to your computer, the records are being shipped out the door, all in one, buy it now. And I don't think anybody else has that website that you can. Oh, and some of them we even reissue on reel-to-reel tape, which is really becoming big right now.
So let's jump in, because there's a lot to unpack there. So yeah, acousticsounds.com is kind of the nervous system. It's the hub of where it all comes together. But there's so many different elements. Now you're still buying and selling used records, even like you did back in the apartment. You're still doing that today.
I can't stop, man. I can't stop. You know why?
Why?
Because, you know, just like probably you, I want to go through them first, because there's always a few records that I need, you know.
How big is your personal collection right now?
I've got about 10,000 to 15,000 at home and about the same at work. You know, I know that's a big 10 to 15, but I ain't counting them, you know what I mean?
So when you made the jump from being a used record dealer to creating your own title, to reissuing titles that you liked, what was the first title?
Okay, the first title I did was Virgil Thompson, The Plow That Broke the Plane, which is a classical with Stokowski conducting. So I was in New York. I went to buy a used record collection, and I went in this guy's basement, and it was a pretty good collection, but, you know, he had let some people in that cherry-picked it and stuff. And so, you know, I didn't get my way on the collection, you know. So I had a bunch of cash with me, and I went down to Vanguard Records, you know, the label, sat across from the legend Seymour Solomon, and I had 10,000 cash, in a bank envelope or whatever, what do you call it, you know. And I said, you know, I'll give you 10,000 right now up front, prepayment to do this, you know. And I mean, he kind of surprised him, you know what I mean? Like nobody ever walks in his office and offers cash for classical music, you know. I think it kind of scared him, you know.
I think anyone coming in with an envelope full of $10,000 would startle just about any business owner.
Hey, it won't startle me. If you want to come startle me, please come. But yeah, it was kind of funny. I just happened to have the cash on me, you know what I mean? And I just wanted him to know I was serious in case he wanted to do the deal then. But he's kind of a legendary guy. He's passed away since. But the real first album, the first jazz album I did was in 92, was Sonny Rollins' Way Out West. And, you know, I could tell you the timeline. I think it's kind of interesting because when you look back, I was moving pretty quickly, you know. So let's just say I got to Kansas in 84 around the same time CDs came out. I started collecting albums as a hobby. I was just a cook, pretty much minimum wage type cook, short order cook. Then I started collecting albums. By 1986, you know, I'm full-fledged business, you know. And so then in 1990 is when I reissued my first album. So, I mean, just starting from scratch, starting from nothing really, to in like 5 years having a reissue label and doing your own reissues is not bad, you know. And then by 1994, what's the next natural step, right? Well, you start recording your favorite artist. So in 1994, which is 4 years later, recorded Jimmy Rogers' Bluebird, which won the W.C. Handy Award for the Best Traditional Blues Album. Mm-hmm. Then 1997, we started Acoustic Mastering, which was inside one of the world's best pressing plants, RTI, Record Technologies. Me and the owner, Don McInnes, got together and we bought a mastering facility and we hired Stan Ricker to do the cutting. And Stan did it for years and then Kevin Gray did it for, I think, the next 14 years. So, or no, wait, maybe the next 10 years. But altogether, we had Acoustic Mastering for 14 years. So from just starting from nothing to in 4 years, 4 or 5 years doing a reissue, and then in 4 years doing a recording, and then in 3 more years, you have your own mastering facility. You know what I mean?
That's the American dream. That was, you're really living the American dream, and it's very, very admirable to see what you've done in that period of time. I'm quite envious. I must admit. I mean, you're doing the sort of job every day that I would love to do. So, you know, well done. Hats off to you, Jed.
Hey, man, you're doing it. You're doing your side of it. You know, it takes all of us to keep this vinyl going. And, I mean, and it's just so crazy that people ask me all the time, you know, how did you know this was going to happen? Did you see this coming? And what I tell people all the time in interviews and that, I says, listen, I trusted my ears. I knew vinyl would never die. Now, what I didn't see coming is CD dying like it did. Mm. You know what I mean? I knew vinyl wouldn't die. Now, did I know it was going to, you know, like children my daughter's age would be buying it? And did I see the CD's death as fast and as it was? No, I can't say that, you know, I'd be lying if I said I did, you know, but I did trust my ears, and I knew I've ever since 1985, every penny I've gotten, I've reinvested in to some way buying more stock LPs or upping the quality of everybody's albums. You know what I mean? Like we're buying stuff in the pressing plant all the time, you know, like, you know, we can get this kind of extruder, you know, it does this or it, you know, just, Some things are so standard, you really can't change a record press that much, you know what I mean? It does a basic job. But anything we can change, we do. So we're always just, every dollar I've made from this has just been reinvest back into our hobby, you know? So we need guys like you. We need the customer. And basically, you and me are really the consumer, and that's probably why you get it so well, and why I get it so well is we're really the end user, and we're just doing the things we think need to be done or should be done. Mm-hmm. The one thing I think I've done that others haven't is I like, since I'm a consumer and you know, since I'm really the collector, I want y'all to see how the sausage is made, because that's what interested me. You know, I wanted to, you know, to go to a mastering session and see a record being mastered. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that was like, you know,
it's fascinating. You want to
right? Fascinating.
Yeah.
Right, and so like, so the master Doug Sachs, you know, you get to go to see Doug master a record. You know what I mean? And so I know that you guys or our guys or our customers, they're like me. They want to see that shit, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and like one of my favorite saying is, you know, I don't want to have to stick my head up a cow's ass to see where butter comes from. But actually I do when it comes to this, you know, yeah. I want to see where it comes from, and I want to see how it's made. And I know that my guys, so, you know, when we bought a pressing plant or we started a pressing plant, you know, most individual consumers didn't know what an SMT press is and what SMT stands for, Southern Tool and Machine, you know, out of Nashville. They didn't know the guy that invented its name and you know, the Alpha 2LX is the European version, and there's a fine built, which is a manual press, and there's another company called Hamilton, and you know, and so we show that, you know, and we let people know, you know, the different presses and different things like that, you know what I mean, and so we're trying to and now with websites like yours where there's, you know, podcasts and there's also YouTube. You know, it's easier to show people the ins and outs and everything. And then plus, I think the world is also evolving. They're wanting to see, they care more about everything that they buy and how it's made. And it's all just kind of working together. And since this is kind of a handcrafted item, especially these UHQRs we're making now.
So let's take a step back because we're jumping all over a bit. And I want to make sure we're focusing on some of the audiophile areas.
Yeah, yeah? Please keep me focused, man. Because what happens to me is
you get excited.
I get excited and I think about things, and they make me think about other things, and I just don't want to forget about the next thing I thought about because I figure it's interesting. But yeah, focus is good.
That's fine. I'll jump in when I think we're driving into the weeds. So at acousticsounds.com, you've got, you know, a heap of equipment, also, like you say, you know, a one-stop shop for the audiophiles. In the titles, in the vinyl titles, you do classic titles, Dave Brubeck, Miles Davis, Sonny Rollins, but there's also a lot of more modern-day titles. Well, I'd say, you know, conventional titles. There's REO Speedwagon, High Infidelity, Elton John, Too Low for Zero, Styx, Cornerstone. Those records are albums that you could find in the $5 bin in most cities in the USA. Why repress audiophile copies of those albums as well?
Now, everything on Acoustic Sounds, you know, we didn't press. And everything at Acoustic Sounds, you know, we don't. Sometimes people get confused. They think we're a lot bigger than we are, meaning like they think that just because Acoustic Sound sells it, they might think that we had something to do. That's just the major labels, you know, are jumping back into vinyl, and, you know, they make their decisions. They may do, you know, all the Styx albums, for instance, and someone like you might be like, well, that's not really necessary when you can go to any used record store and buy it for $5 a piece. But there's not a used record store in every town. Mm-hmm. And some people want them new. And sometimes they do them better. Now, sometimes they don't know, you know, what band or titles they should be doing. They might do some that you think, and you might be right, it doesn't need to be done, and they might get stuck with them, you know. But Acoustic Sound's job is we want to have pretty much anything that came out, you know. I'm not a real big fan of, of rap or some genres, you know, but we like to have whatever the major labels are coming out with, you know what I mean? And and you know, I'm getting older, I don't know the latest music, you know, so, but we want to have it, you know what I mean? And so a lot of the stuff that we, there's two things that you can do on our website. You can pull up the Analog Productions, which is my label, so I can almost guarantee that anything that's on that label, the analog master was used in the highest quality from the beginning to the end was used. Okay, that's one thing. Now, you can also pull up the quality record pressings. Now, that's record presses, the records that our pressing plant pressed. Now, they might be for my label, but they might be for a major label. Like, for instance, we just pressed the Beatles White Album and the new remix, and we pressed the new remix Sgt. Pepper. Now, we did that for the States, you know. That now, they press in Europe for the European, like whatever's in Australia is probably maybe the European pressings.
Right.
But whatever on those two titles are in the States were pressed by us. So, you know, of course, some people like, man, you reissued the Beatles? You know, and I'm like, oh, boy, I wish that was true. I mean, maybe we're getting closer. I mean, we're pressing it. You know, that's at least a step. At least we are able to put one step in to ensuring quality to the job. You know what I mean?
So let me ask you this. So when they come to you, when a label comes to you, and I guess this would have been Parlophone, EMI, or whoever owns that now.
Apple.
Oh, yeah, of course, Apple. So when Apple comes to you and says, look, Chad, we want to use quality record pressing to be able to press these out, you're selected because, you know, obviously, you know, your reputation is there. What makes quality record pressing so much more desirable than maybe some of the other pressing plants?
Well, you know, it starts with, we have the best, one of the best plating guys probably in the world named Gary Sahlstrom that runs the plant, and he's a great plating engineer. So, you know, everything starts from the beginning, right? So, you know, the mastering engineer hopefully has the original master tape and it's a good mastering engineer. Then once we get it, hopefully we are the best plating place where we plate it right away and we do a good job and we have the best equipment and the best guy. So it starts from us, from plating, and Gary is great at that. So he makes good parts. Then we use virgin vinyl from Thailand, and then we think we've rebuilt our machines, and they're running great, and then we train the pressmen. We have, like, one pressman for every press right now, and most pressing plants have one for four, okay? Now, we need to get it. One to one is extreme. You know, you can't really make any money that way. We're going to try to move it to like one operator has two presses. But again, most are three or four per person. Okay. Then we also have a strict quality control where they're listening to the records as they're being pressed. Now, some people go, every record? No. They grab one off the press and they go listen to it. You know, maybe 10 records are pressed and they come back and if there's anything wrong, they tell the press guy, you know what I mean? Also, when they're putting the records in the sleeves, we do it manually. Some really big pressing plants in Europe and that, it's so automated that the record falls into the sleeve. It's like a robot that puts the record in the sleeve. Well, there's no human eye that saw that record fall in the sleeve. You know, they're assuming that that record's mint or perfect, but no record's perfect in record pressing, you know what I mean? So
not only that, but paper gives you all, gives the record the scuffs. I've gotten a lot of records in the past, and I believe a lot of them are from European pressings that are full of dust and a lot of like paper flakes and things like that. And when I open a record, that's not a welcome sign.
Right, right. Well, that's one thing. But the other is some of them do use the nice rice paper in that automatic thing. Mm-hmm. And, well, I guess instead of just even talking about them, I'll just tell you what we do is we have humans that are look at each record front and back and then slowly put them into the sleeve. Mm-hmm. A lot of press, you know, most pressing plants probably do that. Do they look as slowly and are they as critical as we are? Most of them aren't. So that ensures, like, for instance, if somebody was to negotiate a price with us, which we don't do, but if they were to say, well, man, can you lower your price? It'd be like, okay, well, maybe we just don't look as closely at the records. You know what I mean? We can't do both.
What's the fallout of that? Like, for instance, out of every 1,000 records that get visually inspected, how many get put on the not-to-sell pile?
Oh, dude, that's going to be different on every record. Some records are harder to press, or some machine might not be running. I know it's a general question. I just have a feeling that we pull a lot. There's a lot of the records we pull out that we could have left in, and if you had got it, you wouldn't have thought there was something wrong with it. There really wasn't. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes it's just the label might
be a little wonky.
A bit torn.
Yeah.
Like, or just something. Or there might be, like, just a visual something. I mean, sometimes I think we're almost too careful, but it's kind of hard to train them one way and then say, well, you can kind of start making exceptions here and there, you know, and then it's a
slippery slope.
Yeah, it's not easy, but we know that we are very particular, and that's the last person that's going to look at the record before you get it. So that alone, if a company does that really well, they're going to eliminate most of their defects, you know,
So
right there in that process.
So let's say, what is it, maybe 1 to 2% of records get kicked out in that regard?
No, I would say more than that.
Oh, okay. What do you do? What do you do with those records? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
We regrind them. You know, what they do is they take them, and there's a machine that's a label punch, and then you put it right over that punch, and it punches just the label out. And then you can throw the vinyl into a regrind machine, and it regrinds that vinyl. And the reason you cut the label out is the label is paper and it's stuck on the vinyl. You know what I mean? You don't want that paper back in. So now it's vinyl, and then you throw it in a regrinder, and it regrinds it, and it throws it through another dusting machine. And actually, you know, I mean, we're proud that we use mostly virgin vinyl, but when the regrind is actually still from the virgin vinyl, and, you know, I'm not probably the best one to explain this, but there's some properties about it being heated up again and then ground down and then dusted. And then when you add that, let's say you go 50-50 regrind and 50-50 virgin, sometimes it even makes a better record or just as good as the virgin, you know what I mean? Because it just changes both it changes it, you know. And
the chemical compounds, right.
Yeah, somehow, again, it's when they explain it to me, it sounds really good. And when I try to explain it, you know,
the important thing is you take the label out, and the paper is not part of that regrind, yeah?
Right.
How much of a difference does it make when the plating is on site? How much of a difference to the quality does that make?
Well, first of all, there's a big difference when you plate it right away. You know what I mean? Like some plants, like let's say we get a lacquer in. We need to get it right away in the bath because every moment it's degrading. You know, so first of all, it's very critical to get working on it right away, and a lot of places don't. You know, so that's critical. you know what? It's like anything. Every step is critical. And let's say you don't do a good job in the plating and making your stamper. Well, I don't care how good of a pressing plant or how good your QC is, you're going to have a bad product or less than perfect product.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I shouldn't use the word perfect in record making because there's it's really no such thing. But, you know, you basically everything, the beginning is the most important thing on anything. And, you know, that part, if you got a bad part, then I don't care how good your press is, how good your press man is, how good your QC person is. You know, you're going to hear what's on that part,
mm-hmm.
you know, and or whatever the problem is. And so, you know, we don't want to go through all the painstaking quality control and all that over a record that wasn't going to be good to begin with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it is the answer is it's very important.
You wanna,
but everything is.
You want to build a house on a solid foundation. You can't.
There you go.
Yeah. So when it comes to stamping the records, what is the number of pressings that you attribute to a stamper before you replace it?
Well, what they do is this. The general number is anywhere between 500 and 1,000. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why people don't like to hear why people like to hear, hey, we throw away the stampers after, you know, 1,000, is more because in the 70s and 80s and that when vinyl was really kicking, some pressing plants would just milk those stampers until they were really in bad shape, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but sometimes the stamper starts wearing out at 400. You know what I mean? It's more to do with when you see anything wrong or it's wearing out to pull it off. So if one is wearing faster than, and you can see it, they pull it off, whether it's 400 or it's 900. But, hey, if it's running good at 900, you know what I mean? Then run it to 1,000. You follow what I'm saying?
Sure.
So I'd say anywhere is between 500 and 1,000, but it more depends on, they don't just set a number like, all right, at 800, take the stamper off.
Right. There's judgment involved.
Right. There's judgment. Like, hey, if that sucker's running good and it's looking good and it is good, why take a good stamper off sooner than it should take? On the other hand, why make one that doesn't look good go all the way to 800? Let's just say from 4 to 1,000 and somewhere in between there, and it's just depending on how it's looking. But the reason everybody is interested in that is more because there was a certain time that some pressing plants were abusing, you know, they weren't.
Sure.
In order to save money and time, they were, you know, just like everybody does in everything. You know what I mean? They just.
We heard back in the in Michael Jackson Thriller days, they were trying to press these records so much they couldn't get the masters quickly, and some of these were running 5,000 or more.
Well, I'd like to ask Gary, you know, my mm-hmm. the pressing guy and plating guy has been in doing this probably for 40 years. You know, that would be interesting to know. I mean, I don't even know if it's possible to go to 5,000, but maybe it is. But I, you know what? Of all the records, it'd probably be the one they needed.
Yeah, there was that 18-month window where it just, you know, they were selling like, you know, God knows how many hundreds of thousands a week.
Uh-oh, I'm going to have to cut you off there. Well, I warned you earlier, this is part one of a two-parter, so give yourself a little bit of a break now. Take out the headphones, go run around the yard a bit. Run up to the shops, grab a burrito, refresh your coffee, and come on back. Part two, episode number 170, featuring Chad Kasem of AcousticSounds.com, will be available shortly. See you soon.